all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information. Good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wiscommon Sense for this Monday, November 21st. It's a beautiful day on Lake Wissota, 25 right now, going to be sunny and 31, 35 tomorrow, 38 on Wednesday, quiet all week, except for a slight chance of light rain or snow on Thanksgiving. So just be extra careful with your travels whenever that might take place this week. A short week here again for the show. We did a couple last week after the post-election vacation, and we'll do three this week with no live shows on Thursday or Friday. Aaron Zomers will be here in the producer chair regardless because he has nothing better to do than to sit and babysit, bunch of narcissistic air talent hacks like me. So good morning, Aaron. How are you? I didn't realize you were listening. How are you?
Good morning. Always listening. It is my job. Well, okay. Unless I'm in the bathroom.
Well, see, now, I'm glad you take that seriously because, I mean, Mathers, on the other hand, sometimes just tuned me out entirely. So I appreciate this attention to detail.
Yeah, got to do what you got to do. Got to keep my position here at Civic Media. Make sure I don't push myself out the door.
Here's the thing. You're willing to wake up at like 4 a.m. or whatever it is to get here for a 6 a.m. show. So you're already overqualified just by virtue of being willing to do that. And we deeply appreciate that. Coming up this morning, John Calabrese on the Dunn County healthcare referendum. We talked about this before the election, and we haven't really gotten into what the results were. Asking voters in Dunn County, how do they feel about the idea of a national nonprofit health insurance plan for Americans? Nothing specific, not Medicare for all, not the public option or any jargon. Just what do you think of the idea of a national nonprofit health insurance plan, so that all Americans can have some kind of coverage? And it's an interesting, you can look at the results a couple of different ways. So we will do that at 7:30 with John Calabrese. Coming up at 6:30, Dr. Kristen Lyerly on the way Wisconsin Republicans want to make government even more invasive when victims of rape and incest are made pregnant by their attackers. And is it time to say toodles to Twitter and make the move to Mastodon? I did last night, and we're going to ask ourselves if this is truly what all the cool nerds are doing as Elon Musk continues to light $44 billion on fire, letting Donald Trump and all kinds of other Nazis and bigots back onto a space that we thought was getting increasingly safe, if no less toxic in its takes at times. To reach us, our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com, and our phone number 715-388-7155. The holiday weekend got going a little bit early for our family here. We have two adult daughters, and each one has a couple of kids. And so the older daughter out in Idaho is already out here with her two boys because where they live, school is off all week. And so it's been great to welcome them out, although it started with a flight that arrived at just before 1 a.m. at the Twin Cities Airport. And that's a character builder right there, but especially when you got a teenager and a little kid in tow. But eventually we got back to the hotel, everybody got rested and hunkered down, and looking forward to just a great weekend with them. And then come Thanksgiving, we'll meet up with our younger daughter, husband, and two little kids, and be all together for about 48 hours over Thanksgiving weekend. Which is, again, we're very blessed to be able to do that. But we also know that this year, we may not see either one of them around Christmas time. We're just not sure yet, between traveling to Idaho or traveling to Michigan, how things are going to come together. So it's interesting to head into the holiday season not really knowing, what your plans are yet. We're usually, better at preparing that kind of thing, but we really focused on getting everybody together for Thanksgiving. So we're very excited about that. We did do Mall of America yesterday with the two boys. I still call it Camp Snoopy. I think it's Nickelodeon Universe. I can't believe the mall is celebrating 30 years since it opened up. And we lived near the Mall of America when it first opened. My wife was going through her medical residency at the University of Minnesota Hospitals at the time. And we had, you know, a three-year-old and a five-year-old, I believe, when Mall of America first opened with Camp Snoopy. So as you can imagine, that was heaven on earth for those two little girls, taking them on every ride that we could. And it was, I have to say, kind of interesting. I don't want to be too gushy here, but there's something about, you know, my wife and I just being able to sit on the bench now and watch one of our daughters take her kids on the rides, because grandma and grandpa are a little too old for those rides now. But it was fun to see it play out all these years later. A lot of Dallas Cowboy fans at Mall of America yesterday. And then I realized, you know, that they were able to go there early because the game with the Vikings wasn't until 3:25. So they did a little bit of time at Mall of America, and then they headed up to Minneapolis to the game. And what a great day to be a Dallas Cowboys fan, you know, especially if you could travel to go see the game and maybe do a little, you know, mall and rides and such, and then put an absolute whooping on the Minnesota Vikings. So for all of us in Green Bay that didn't have games yesterday, happy one day a year we root for the Cowboys, for those who celebrate, because while every other day of the year we want nothing to do with rooting for the Cowboys, what slim hopes we have in the division means we have to take some joy whenever somebody can beat the Vikings, and that really happened yesterday. We'll have more coming up right after this break. This is Up North News Radio. Welcome back. This is Up North News Radio for a Monday, November 21st. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Nice to have you along for this short work week for many before we head into the Thanksgiving holiday. Over at UpNorthNewsWI.com and UpNorthNewsWI on our social media feeds, our question of the day Friday was asking if this is any way to choose a state Supreme Court, the way that we elect our justices currently. And some folks will contend that that's the way we should be doing it, the way we're doing it now, through nonpartisan elections, even though these court elections have become essentially nonpartisan in name only. We reviewed some of the other ways that other states choose state Supreme Court justices and whether you thought Wisconsin should consider any of them. The one that was embraced most in our admittedly non-scientific poll based on, you know, social media comments is just anything that involves a nonpartisan commission. It could be the nonpartisan commission gives a list of finalists to the governor, and the governor appoints that person. In some states, that list of finalists goes to the legislature appoints somebody. In some states, the nonpartisan commission is named by or controlled by the governor. In others, it's the state bar association of attorneys in the state that does it. Whatever the case may be, based on your responses, anything is better than what we have right now. But what we have right now is what we're going to have for the next time through, when we have perhaps up to four candidates, maybe more, who will declare for an open seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. A conservative justice is retiring. That seat will be open in April with a primary in February. And if you think it's too early to start talking about that, think again, because we are only a little over a week away from when candidates can start taking out nominating papers to get on the ballot for the February primary, not just for state Supreme Court, but for all manner of local nonpartisan races, school boards, city councils, town boards, what have you. So the work of democracy, you know, just constantly rolls on and will be again. And that state Supreme Court race is going to determine control of the courts. Right now, it's a 4-3 conservative majority. If progressives were to take that seat back, you'd end up with a 4-3 progressive majority on the state Supreme Court. And then you would have all manner of efforts to try to have the court revisit areas that it would be able to do. Remember, this is a court that struck down drop boxes. This is a court that struck down safeguards during the early terrible days of the pandemic, and on and on. And having that court flip 4-3 progressive might be just the thing this state needs, no matter what your political stripe. Because right now, with single-party rule of the legislature locked in through rigged maps, the potential for chaos has grown even more than it already was. There was a lot of chatter over the weekend, and I don't know that it started with a particular tweet, but it probably did. Somebody tweeted something along the lines of that now that we talked about how the assembly didn't get a 2/3 Republican majority in the elections, and everybody was kind of relieved about that because it protected Governor Evers' veto pen. Because otherwise, I mean, Republicans could pass just any terrible bills they wanted. They'd be upheld by a conservative Supreme Court. So a lot of folks relieved that the assembly didn't go 2/3 Republican, but the Senate did. And it's the state Senate that can impeach and remove officials. Remember, they already removed one of Governor Evers' cabinet members, Brad Paff, because they felt like it for political reasons. And now that was just on a majority vote to reject his nomination to be state agriculture secretary. Of course, ironically, now he's one of the state senators after having run in a special election. But people were asking, does this now mean the Republicans could, on a whim, impeach Governor Evers and then impeach the lieutenant governor-elect, Sarah Rodriguez, and then impeach Josh Call and Doug LaFollette, and you know, on they go. What kind of power have we given to the state Supreme Court with this 2/3 Republican majority? Well, first off, you know, you have to ask yourself, even in times as chaotic as this with the Republican Party, are all 22, it's 22-11 Republican, are all 22 of those Republicans really willing to get on board something like that? And I know that everybody has their opinion one way or another on that. You know, we don't have a Dale Schultz in there anymore, who is the explicit voice of moderation. I would say, as a former member of the state Senate, I would still would come down on the side of saying that would not be a 22 person unanimous vote of the Senate Republican caucus. But also, it was pointed out that the way succession works in state government, let's say that they were to impeach and remove Tony Evers from office, the new governor would be Sarah Rodriguez, the incoming lieutenant governor. And from a reading of statute that I saw online over the weekend, they could go ahead and impeach other folks if they want, but the new governor gets to appoint the replacement. It's not that, you know, the seats just stay vacant. They have to be filled. And so, you know, the governor, whether that was Evers or Rodriguez, would then appoint the replacement, which, as I understand it, is not does not need Senate confirmation to take effect, because you'd treat it like any other emergency vacancy. So hopefully that scenario is something that won't come to pass. It won't stop investigations. It won't stop a lot of saber rattling. It certainly won't stop it at the federal level. Republicans are taking the House in Washington, D.C. They're taking it by about the same slim 5-vote majority that Democrats held. And despite the craziness that will go on there, the instability, the infighting, you can be pretty well assured that there will still be investigations. Well, I want to make sure I put that in quotes. We talked about that on Friday with Mark Jacob. These aren't really investigations. They're, you know, show trials. They're dog and pony shows, whatever, you know, whatever the case may be. That will still take place come January, unfortunately. People thought they were voting for, you know, Republican candidates who were serious about fighting inflation and, you know, taking on crime. And as they're learning already from the rhetoric of the winners, they have no intention of doing that. There never was a plan to address inflation. There never was a plan to address crime. It's all about treating politics as blood sport. And so there will be these quote unquote investigations, probes, innuendo. You'll get sick of hearing about Hunter Biden. Though I do have to admit, I'm not unhappy to see that the response to that is a lot of people posting pictures, and then the caption says something along the lines, this is Hunter Biden, who used the family's name for grift and raised tens of millions of dollars and then got $2 billion mysteriously from Saudi Arabia. And it's actually a picture of Jared and Ivanka Trump, or Ivana Trump, not Hunter Biden. And let's face it, there are a lot of people in a frame of mind to say, you know, bring it on. If you want to talk about Hunter Biden, and I don't know why you would, because again, there's still nothing there of any consequence. But if you want to, yeah, you're going to hear a lot about Jared. You're going to hear a lot about Ivana, and you're going to hear a lot about the adult children of other Republican members of Congress, simply because if that's the game we're playing now, that adult children of politicians are fair game. I don't necessarily like starting with something so negative on a Monday morning, but there's going to be a lot less, you know, eye rolling and complaining about Republicans doing things that are counter to what they said they do during the campaign. And instead it will be essentially tit for tat to say, okay, let's go ahead and do this. Whether you're, you know, Lauren Boebert, who apparently is narrowly going to win re-election in Colorado, but you know, her life's not going to be easy for the next couple of years as people continually remind voters and constituents of her not so great personal track record, to Ted Cruz and all the others. That if that's what they want to do, if they want to play character assassination, there's an increasing number of people saying, okay, well, maybe we should do that. And go back and forth both ways. It's unfortunate, but that could be where we're heading. So this is all to say that as you gathered from our question of the day, people are really embracing the nonpartisan commission approach toward filling vacancies or just putting people in office, something that takes power out of the hands of politicians. That's what we had for a question of the day on Friday. Today's question of the day, once I get something posted right after the show over at the Up North News Facebook page, will be about our topic at 7:30, and that's the question of a national nonprofit health insurance plan. Now, again, the question won't be worded for any specific type of plan, but just the idea of, should there be some kind of a national health insurance plan, whether it becomes the only plan or whether it becomes an option that people can, you know, buy into is not the purpose of the question. Simply whether the idea should be discussed and then formed into something more specific and then put it into place. If you vote yes, you're saying, yeah, we should at least talk about it, maybe make this happen, definitely make it happen. If you're voting no, what you're saying is, no, government has no role whatsoever in health insurance. It should totally be up to the marketplace by for-profit companies. I don't even know why the government is involved in Medicaid. You know, would be the view there is, you know, government shouldn't be have anything to do with health insurance, and it should totally be to the whims of the private sector. I might be putting my thumbs on the scale of that question, but that's going to be our question of the day there. And yeah, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll get into some lighter fare about, you know, whether it's Thanksgiving plans or, you know, meals. That's probably my idea for Wednesday is, you know, Thanksgiving dinner, one's got to go. And we'll put a bunch of stuff on a plate and ask what it needs to be. You know, if you got to go without something, would it be the stuffing? Would it be the sweet potatoes? Would it be the Jell-O that has, you know, Lucky Charms or, you know, whatever that people like to put in that? Or do we really go nuclear on folks? And do we do cranberries? The berries versus the sauce that slurps out of the can. Now, I say that as a member of Team Slurp or Team Can or Team Sauce, whatever you want to call it. I kind of prefer it that way. The other purists will say, no, anything, but you know, they've got to have the mashed up cranberries. You got to be able to taste the stems and the seeds or whatever it is you like about, you know, your cranberries that way. See, I've already opened up the hornet's nest here. Not that I expect that this is going to become a major deal, but just in case it does, 715-388-7155, you know, Team Natural Seeds and Twigs and Team, you know, Jelly Sauce in a Can. You can let me know. We're going to try to have at least a little bit of fun with Thanksgiving in this otherwise not so fun political environment. Kristen Lyerly's coming up after the break. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
I'm going to try to get something that's going to get Kristen Lyerly either singing or dancing for us. God knows we need it. It is 33 past the hour on a beautiful morning across Wisconsin, mid-20s, going to be some sun coming out later on, but we've got our own ray of sunshine with us, joining us from Green Bay. Kristen, how are you?
Oh, Pat, I'm awesome. How are you?
trying to get to awesome. We're gonna get there, but I got one kid and two grandkids in town, so I can't be not awesome. I'll tell you that much.
That's great. We're gonna have a beautiful week. We get to give thanks at the end of the week. There's so much goodness and so much possibility. This feels like a great Monday morning.
Yeah, it is going to be good. And you had a really good time over the weekend with your good friend Pat McBride.
Oh my gosh, the more I get to know Pat McBride, the more I love this man. He came to Green Bay for a book signing, and a bunch of docs who he had mentored and really shepherded many of us. You know, medical school is a hard time, mm-hmm. and we need a little extra help, and many of us needed his help in particular. So a lot of folks showed up, and he told some just really incredible stories, including his mom. I was shocked to find out that his mom, who was a political reporter in Milwaukee, very engaged, very successful, had actually been involved in 1968 in Chicago when it with the Democratic National Convention and all the violence that happened there. And she had been hit over the head with a club by a police officer, which caused seizures for the rest of her life and really caused her health to decline. And, you know, that was kind of the end of her career. So talk about a personal, you see these videos of things like this happening, and it doesn't mean that much to you until you hear the rest of the story.
Yeah, and we'll it's a good reminder that we're running a best of show on Friday, day after Thanksgiving, and I think we'll have to find that Pat McBride interview and make that part of it, because it was just so interesting. Sense. I mean, what a fascinating life.
Oh, he's like the Forrest Gump of Wisconsin.
truly is. We have to turn to one serious matter in the news here that we want to take your expertise on. Although, frankly, we don't need your expertise as an OBGYN to talk about this. We can just talk about it, your expertise as a woman, to hear that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is saying, well, you know, maybe I'll compromise on this 1849 abortion ban and allow for exceptions for rape and incest victims, but only if they go to the police and get a report, which I would imagine involves some invasive questions, maybe an invasive exam and all of that. So you got to prove, you know, to my satisfaction, says Robin Voss, you know, that you've been a victim before we'd even consider any kind of exception to the ban on abortion in the state. And again, you can talk about it from a doctor standpoint or just from the standpoint of being a decent human being.
It just underlines that he doesn't get it. You know, one in three women in this country are victims of intimate partner violence. One in three. And do you know how many of those people actually report it? One in four, it's a fraction, because these people are embarrassed, they're threatened, they're often in bad situations where their partner will come after them, there will be consequences. So they don't have that option. This is, I mean, play this out with me. So I am a physician, and a patient comes to me and explains that this has happened, and I'm trying to take care of her, but she doesn't want anyone to know. She just wants to be whole. So how do I tell her, no, I can't provide the care that you need until you file a police report? Mm-hmm. And then she goes home, and what happens? She doesn't get the care that she needs. And, you know, I hadn't thought about this perspective, but I was talking with my partner about this, who is a police officer, and he said, what happens if this relationship goes sour? Maybe they're in a good relationship, but she decides that, you know, this pregnancy isn't the right thing for her. So then she files a police report against her partner, who then is the subject of a police report just so that she can get an abortion. Like, yeah. get out of my exam room. Let me take care of my patients. This is an inadequate solution to a giant problem. This 1849 ban needs to be repealed. It is unenforceable. And we need to let doctors take care of patients without politicians in the exam room, period.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, Governor Evers has said that that's, and Josh Call, the attorney general, has said, this is not something we're negotiating. We're not negotiating a degree of care or a degree of rights for women. And I think Voss was hoping that this would somehow or another either short circuit or circumvent Evers and Call trying to get a court to overturn the 1849 law. I know that things in court don't always move, you know, with great haste, shall we say. But it is unfortunate that we're not, like in Michigan, they had something similar. But, I mean, a court put it on hold almost immediately. And we're not there yet in Wisconsin. But you certainly see why this needs to be pursued in court, because we don't have a legislature willing to revisit and, you know, restore women's rights.
Unfortunately, it's true. And I think they're going to throw everything at the wall just to see what sticks. So, I mean, as a doctor who loves taking care of my patients and not just changing their parts and changing their oil, but like actually treating them like human beings who are whole people, this does not work. This is not the solution. We need to repeal this ban.
Yeah. And as if, you know, we have to reaffirm this, we don't really, but again, in the most recent Marquette poll, 84% of Wisconsin voters, including 73% of Republicans, support rape and incest exceptions to the state's abortion ban. This is, again, a case where just a handful of extreme politicians are making an otherwise 50-50 state live under, you know, their rules, even though 3/4 of their own voters don't agree with those rules.
Well, it's true. And the vast majority of Wisconsinites oppose the overturning of Roe. And Robin Voss himself said, and this is a quote, "I also think that having a discussion about where society is and making sure that we are in tune with the majority in society is important, because we have to work on winning the culture war, but we also have to work on making sure that we have a position that is tenable and it makes sense to the vast majority of people." Well, these are your words. So, Speaker Voss, repeal the ban. That is what the vast majority of society is in tune with. It's demonstrated over and over and over again.
Oh, Lordy, I jumped all over that on Friday. You know, on the one hand, he's saying to be in tune with the voters, but that line, we need to win the culture war.
Uh-huh.
Like, really? That's your point? You know, it reminds me of what Paul Ryan said over the weekend about, he now officially describes himself as a never Trumper. And
yeah.
He says it's because, you know, Trump can't win elections and we want to win. And I love that people caught on to that right away with Paul Ryan. Like, it's not because Trump tried to overthrow the government or, you know, incited violence or, you know, is the most corrupt president we've ever had or all that. It's about winning. That's what finally got Paul Ryan to come over. And for Robin Voss, too, it's just about winning.
Yeah, I watched that interview as well. Did you notice how he snuck in there? Oh, I'm glad you brought my book along. I mean, it was all about selling his book. And he said he's not going to run for office again. He likes what he's doing. So we'll see where Paul Ryan goes from here. But yeah, I found that to be a demonstration that Paul Ryan really isn't in this for the people. He's in this for Paul Ryan.
I know that this is going to lead to a sense of exhaustion for some folks, but I feel like I want to underline this yet again, that until the protections of Roe v. Wade are fully restored, until that happens, this is going to be the big issue in every election. Abortion, healthcare, women's rights are going to be on the ballot in a big way every race going forward until those rights are restored. I don't think I'm being over dramatic about this.
No, you aren't at all. I mean, this spring, we've got a giant, we've talked about this before, a giant Supreme Court election here in Wisconsin. It's on the ballot there. It's on the ballot for the mayoral race here in Green Bay. Eric Genrich is going up against Chad Weninger. Well, Chad's wife is in charge of Pro-Life Wisconsin. They want no exceptions for any reason. So, I mean, everywhere you go, it's on the ballot in a big way or in a small way. And we know where people stand. We know that people demand their freedom to make their own decisions about their own bodies.
Come on election day, when Democrats defied all of the, you know, conventional wisdom out there in the national media, my view was that while the media got tired of covering the attack on women's rights, women didn't get tired of it, and they remembered this all the way through to election day. And I know I said this, you know, prior to this election, but I have to say again, it's one of those things where women and their allies can't get a sense of, you know, defeatism and say, okay, fine, and walk away, because it will be as bad or worse than you fear if you finally just stop fighting this kind of, you know, hatred against women and their rights.
Yeah, we won't stop, because this is fundamental to who we are. The election is over. All of the information about crime and law and order and inflation and gas prices, I haven't heard anything about that recently, but I'm still hearing that slow drumbeat of women saying this is not right. And until this problem is solved, we're just going to stay with it and keep up a constant, steady fight, because this is too important, not just to us, but to men. I mean, Pat, you've got two daughters. I was talking to a fella yesterday. He said, I've got three daughters. This was never an issue for me before, but now I know I have to do something about it. So we're just going to keep working and inspiring each other and voting and running for office. School boards are on the ballot this upcoming spring. We've got to get the right folks in schools, because that's where our kids are learning. That's where we're creating the next generation. And we're not talking about indoctrination. We're talking about inspiring and teaching and learning, building community. There's so much work that needs to be done, Pat, but I'm really feeling optimistic.
You mentioned why haven't we heard much about gas prices? Because they've been coming down so mysteriously after the election. Gas prices have been tumbling since then. It's almost as if they were inflated artificially for some reason. But that wouldn't happen. That, you know, the oil companies wouldn't be doing something like that. We're talking to Kristen Lierley. We've been talking a bit about exceptions to the abortion ban. And in a couple of minutes before the break here, I want to ask you, you know, up in Dunn County, they had a referendum. We're going to talk about it next hour, that simply asks about the concept of, do you think there should be a national nonprofit health insurance policy? So it doesn't say Medicare for all or whatever the case may be, but you deal with health insurance with it. For-profit insurance companies all the time, and all the paperwork that comes with it. And I wonder if you think from your own patient base, if there is a growing awareness of the need for some kind of a public option instead of an all corporate option.
I think it's really confusing for people, because they've never seen what a public option looks like unless they have Medicaid, which nearly 50% of my patients do, because nearly 50% of our births here in Wisconsin are paid for by Medicaid. So that feels pretty good, but it gets taken away when you are done having your baby, and quickly, like in the postpartum period, people lose access to their Medicaid. So they like it when they're on it, but then they're afraid of losing it. They can't even imagine what it would be like to just have access to affordable healthcare, to be able to go to the doctor and know that you could afford to do that, because ultimately that's the best thing for you and it's the best thing for your family. So I think people like it in concept, but they can't begin to wrap their heads around it because it just feels so far away.
Which is odd because, again, it's been almost 30 years since Bill and Hillary Clinton first, you know, tried to help people who were getting frustrated, you know, by the co-pays and by the HMOs and everything else. And so, you know, again, it is a very long running effort, but the effort goes on. Would you like to hang around and do this day in music history with us?
I would so love to. And one other thing, it's not tangible. It has to be tangible. It has to feel right there for people to really feel what the impact is going to be like. That's the problem. It's still floating around in the ether for most yes, people.
So true. Back with Kristen Lierley after this. This is Up North News Radio. Why you do me like you do? It kind of makes me wonder. I mean, as it is, we have to pay music rights, you know, at a radio station, and then we have to fight with Facebook to make sure they know that we're licensed for it. But if we start singing enough to it, do we have to pay like a karaoke license too? Is Kristen costing us money?
I'm worth it. That's a good question.
No doubt there. This day in music history, the Partridge Family's I Think I Love You hit number one on this day in 1970 and would stay number one for 3 weeks in a row. You and Partridge Family watch it in reruns or anything, or is it too far away for a young woman like you?
Not for a long time, but we have a thing up here called Doctors in Recital where physicians who play instruments and sing go to the Widener Center to perform and raise money for charity. And I always do a little karaoke kind of bit, but my kids are joining me. So we've been joking around that we are the Partridge Family.
Oh, there you go. Okay, well, yeah. you've got a song to practice.
They have no idea what we're talking about. They don't know what that is.
Two notes from this day in music history in 1981. Let's start with Queen and David Bowie. Their collaboration, Under Pressure, went to number one this day in 1981. It was Queen's first chart topper there since Bohemian Rhapsody. And then also from this day in 1981, we're going to go put the leggings and headband on Kristen now, and she's going to sing some Olivia Newton-John for us. The sweaty aerobics anthem, Physical, hit number one this day in 1981 and would stay there. Do you know how many weeks this stayed at number one?
10.
10 weeks. 10 weeks at number one. Kind of scares me that you knew that.
I love Olivia Newton-John.
There was no hesitation.
None whatsoever. Let's see, 1987. Now, this is an interesting bit of trivia. On this day in 1987, Billy Idol's Money Money hit number one. The song it replaced was Tiffany, I Think We're Alone Now. And so, what do both songs have in common?
Tommy James and the Shondells.
Tommy James and the Shondells. Yes. What, one song in the 80s by Tommy James replaces another song in the 80s. So crazy. By the way, this is more your era. Were you like Team Tiffany or Team Debbie Gibson?
Oh, maybe more Debbie Gibson, but not. I was a Duran Duran girl.
A Duran Duran girl, of course. Yeah. I can see it now. You really, I bet you teased the hair up so high.
Oh, man, you have no idea.
Oh, man. Birthdays today. Marlo Thomas is 85. Goldie Hawn is 77. Troy Aikman is 56. On this day, speaking of music, in 1877, Thomas Edison announced his invention of the phonograph, a machine that could record and play sound. Nothing was ever the same since. And as we switch to Eminem and Encore, his fifth studio album that hit number one on this day in 2001, we'll say for our last little history bit, it was on this day in 1676 that the Danish astronomer Ole Rømer presented the first quantitative measurement of the speed of light. Critics immediately pounced including the great, great, great ancestor of Congressman Tom Tiffany, who claimed this is fake news. You can't measure the speed of something if it gets dark outside. So this is what scientists have had to deal with, you know, going back 300 plus years. So
why didn't we believe Ole?
I mean, come on. His name is Ole. Why wouldn't you believe that? He says he can measure the speed of light, then do it. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the change in technology for a second here, because during the break, and it's a short break, and I heard Kristen say, well, I'm going to wake up my boys now. And I thought, well, I got to tell her, no, it's a short break. You don't have time to go over to the, you know, to the room, knock on the door, say, kids, wake up, whatnot. Instead, I just see her put the phone to her ear and wake up the kids by phone. I'm like, I didn't have that back then where you could just bring their phone and look at you just using all, getting all tech parenthood now.
Well, I luckily have a young son who I call little Pat Kreitlow, and he's very reliable. He's a 14-year-old man in a 30-year-old body. So he is consistently up, and not only can I just check in on him, but I can also have him wake up his brother. Often there's a little wrestling that happens in the morning, but that's okay. They get it out of their system, and then there's some breakfast, and then they're off to school.
I cannot tell you the joy I felt yesterday. I talked earlier about my older daughter and her two boys, and we were at Mall of America over the weekend, and we stayed in a hotel, and we had to get up, you know, at a semi-decent hour to check out of the hotel and go do some other things. I can't tell you the joy I felt knowing how hard it is to wake up the 16-year-old. And there's my little girl, who's now in her early 30s, jumping up and down on his bed to wake him up, going, wake up, wake up, wake up, while jumping on the bed. I was like, wow, that, you know, the times have changed, you know.
Did it work?
eventually, but better than if she'd have tried his phone, because he would have just been like, oh, my ringer is off, or I didn't hear it. In other words, everything that said daughter said to me back in the day when we would try to call her up. Well, actually, to this day, if there's times if we send a text or a note or something and we don't get it right away, we get the, oh, I had my ringer off, or what have you. I'm like, I'm not buying that anymore. You're a grown woman in your 30s. But
mm-hmm. Everybody loves a good sleep in, though, Pat.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. And, you know, the other one is 8 years old. And, you know, so they're both sometimes are in a contest to see who can sleep later, especially the kind of weekend that we had with, you know, all over Mall of America and then a water park. They're still at a water park hotel today. I came back here just for the show. And, you know, that's my level of dedication.
The
sacrifices that we make for radio. What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
We're doing Soupsgiving.
Soupsgiving?
Yeah, my sister's husband's family gets together at Thanksgiving, and they make a whole bunch of different soups, and like it's a total feast, just like a traditional Thanksgiving. And we spend some time together and watch some football, and it's like our one time that this crew always gets together, so we just really enjoy it.
Does it go to a different house each year, or does somebody host it all the time?
Same person. It was her idea, and she loves hosting it, and we love going to it. So there's a lot of love happening.
Yeah. Ours is the same. One of my sisters-in-law called Eternal Dibs on Thanksgiving dinner. It's her time to shine.
Yeah.
And does that. Do you do a different soup every year, or do you have a favorite?
So she makes like six different soups, and then she typically makes a turkey as well. Like she does it the way she wants it, and we just appreciate it.
Oh, so you don't have to make a batch of soup or anything.
I make a pie. I make an award-winning pie.
An award-winning pie?
Yes.
Like by, did you provide the award, or did this actually win something at some point?
It was the law school and the medical school at UW have a competition called the Dean's Cup, and there's a baking contest, and my pie won the baking contest.
My God, for everything else we learn about you, now we learn you've won a baking contest.
It's a wicked good pie, Pat. I'll share it with you.
What kind?
Apple.
Oh, okay. I love apple pie. All right. Okay. Well, you have a job for next time you're out here on Lake Wissota. Thank you, Kristen. We really needed this morning.
Happy Monday, Pat. Thanks for starting the week with me.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving. We're very thankful for your friendship. You have a great week.
You too, babe.
All right. Kristen Lyerly, everyone, we'll take a break for news at the top of the hour. In our next hour, John Calabrese on that Dunn County Healthcare Amendment. You're up north.